Heyo, everybody. Welcome to, after last episode being the tease, it wasn't episode 66. Damn it, this one is. This is episode 66 of We Talk Comics. This one's subtitled, We Don't Talk Comics. It'll make sense. I promise. I'm Mo. I got Brett.
Yay.
Hello, Brett.
Hello.
I got Chris. Say yay.
Yay.
I got...
Ha.
Keith, a.k.a. Cup Reporter K, say yabba-dabba-doo.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
All right. As I say, I'm Mo. It's We Don't Talk Comics. We're going to get to the subject and why we don't talk comics in a bit. And the majority of the show, Keith is Keith's going to start off by doing the news here. Now, Keith, you do the news because, well, every week news happens, right?
Every week it happens. Every day it happens.
Every week news happens.
Once a week.
Let's say you want the big stories of the week. Who are you going to go to but the greatest Cup Reporter there is on the planet, Cup Reporter K? Nobody.
That's who I would go to.
That's who you would. But say you wanted to get news every single day. Say you can't wait. Where would you go?
Well, this is getting confusing now. I would go where I go. I go to Comicosity.
And, coincidentally, they are the what for your news?
They are the sponsor. What a coincidence. Cup Reporter K.
That's right. That's right. And how proud are you to have them as your sponsor?
12.
A 12 out of 10?
Out of
just a random 12. 146.
Just 12.
I'm at 146. Proud. Either way, it's Comicosity. They're good to us. And they're a great place for you to go every single day. And other than that, because like I say, I'm feeling a little under the weather, I'm going to shut the hell up. Keith is going to talk and tell us about the news.
Okay, well, we're going to do almost entirely DC news this week. We're going to do a short news section because we got a lot of other talk to do this week. But as announced last week, Hawkman has been canceled. But we also have a wave of cancellations from DC with the new solicits. We have six titles canceled. So, Hawkman, as we had known, Ravagers, shocked no one, Firestorm, a bit of a surprise given it was just given a new creative team, Deathstroke.
And I know I said I was going to shut up, but I'm going to jump in right there, because you say it's a bit of a surprise because it's just given a new creative team. I don't think it's even cracking the top 100 with that new creative team in sales. I mean, probably between 100 and 120, even though it's Dan Jurgens who's writing it. And I tried the first three issues he did. I'm going to tell you something. Nothing spectacular, but more than that, I think it just means we can look at Dan Jurgens, we can look at a lot of these people nowadays, to tell you the truth, that we think of, and they're not draws at all anymore.
No, comments unfortunately, guys? I don't think Jurgens is a draw anymore, unfortunately. I'm a fan, but... He's kind of been the floater of the new 52. He's a cleanup hitter, the same as Giffen is right now.
He's no draw at all. Okay, move on.
All right, and two cancellations of books that are not old books. All the rest of these except Ravagers has been running since the beginning, but we are also losing Sword of Sorcery and Team 7, which will get wrapped up very early.
Surprised on Sword of the Sorcerer, Sorcery.
Why are you surprised? I don't think sales... Was it their lowest selling book, wasn't it?
I don't think it was the lowest selling, but it was probably pretty close. But really...
I know Team 7 was among their top five worst selling.
Who didn't expect an Amethyst book to get canceled, really? I mean...
But DC Properties has Amethyst in the pipeline for all sorts of different... things right now. They've had a whole bunch of shorts on the DC U animated section. I've heard of toy developments over at DC Properties. And there was word of a deal with Mattel. So I was expecting them just to keep the book around just to support that.
You know what, Chris? Then you're thinking about it the wrong way. What you should be thinking is, here we have a book that's not selling at all, and we have all these properties and all these things we want to do with this, So let's cancel this book instead of this losing money on this and making this drag the rest of the properties down, making them look bad. And then when we launch them, if they have some success, we relaunch the book and it rides the wave off them. Instead of the other way around. Instead of that's the way you got to look at it.
Well, I mean, Harris said that they have plans for Amethyst, just not within her own book.
Yeah, a lot of these characters are getting rolled into other books. We've seen that with a lot of what happened from the first round of cancellations. We saw characters rolled into other titles. I would expect most of these. Hawkman will be in Justice League of America. Ravagers, no one's going to miss the Ravagers anyway.
No, hell no.
Firestorm is, I think he's going to Justice League.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah, so these characters, and that's, the Dark title has picked up a couple of these characters as their books went. I'm looking at the January numbers, and it looks like, aside from books that had already been canceled, Fury of Firestorm was the lowest selling DC book. There were lower than Grifter was lower than that, but as I said, a couple of books that were already canceled.
I thought Stormwatch was even lower in sales than Team 7.
Team 7 sits at 133 right next to Ravagers. Demon Knight's lower than that. Stormwatch lower than that. Stormwatch is getting a new creative team in a new direction. So they're giving it another chance, I guess.
Yeah, see, I don't know why I was expecting Stormwatch with its sales being so abysmal to be done, and the other one I was looking at that they've given a long, sustained push to that has never taken off and never will, that I was expecting to be done, is All-Star Western. And Paul Meade and Gray are somebody else who, let's face it, they're just not draws.
Well, they're moving over to Batwing, so we'll see if they can give any interest to that title. I doubt it.
Yeah, another title that's probably among the lowest sales.
One of the things, yeah. Well, of course, because he's stupid. But I mean, one of the things that I'm noticing is that I think there's some pushback a little bit against DC and the introduction of the Wildstorm characters, because you see, Grifter and Team 7, and even Ravagers had Caitlin in it from Gen 13 and stuff like that, and I think that
Voodoo
you're seeing
before that.
Voodoo, yeah, and all these characters that get introduced, and I'm like, I was a fan of a lot of these characters in Wildstorm, but I'm reading them, shoved into the DC universe, and I hate it. And so, I think that there seems to be some pushback from fans on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Grifter should have been an easy insert in the DC universe. He was the most DC-centric character, or followed the mold of DC characters, and they totally botched it. It didn't work at all because they also had Voodoo, and they also were inserting the Demonites into the DCU universe. I think we have to take a step back and insert these characters where they fit one at a time if it's going to be successful at all.
You also have to wonder, though, as you see the failure of this, if there's some properties that other companies or the DC owns that they've been wanting to roll in, that they're going to go, you know what, we should never do it. I mean, I'm worried. I'm scared, guys, that with these Wildstorm characters failed, that, damn it, we'll never see the Ultra Force characters in Marvel.
I think you pretty much guarantee you're never seeing the Ultra Force characters in Marvel.
I mean, the big difference, though, is that at least Jim Lee has a major hand in running DC. Nobody from Malibu has a major hand in running Marvel.
True. I'm a DC apologist for sure. I mean, I wave the flag of the New 52, but it is to me the piece that works the least well. Shoehorning these characters in, it just didn't work. They don't.
Well, how about
they don't feel the same?
How about saying this, Keith? 52 books just doesn't work. It's just too many. I mean, I'm sure they're going to cancel these and they're going to continue to run 52. But at what point in time do they say, you know what, 40 books is ideal? Let's just go with that.
I don't know. They went into this approaching it like how you program TV. And with TV, you launch a whole pile of shows, and the bottom five you cancel and you replace with something else. And then the bottom five I guess 6 months later, you cancel and replace with something else. This kind of churn may just be part of the plan. No one ever expected 52 books that would run forever.
No, and I think he's right. If you only publish what's selling, you're stagnant. You're going to have some fails. You have to keep trying new stuff. And I think that's what we're seeing with these cancellations, is we're going to get some new books and they're going to try something else. That didn't work. This should.
The thing that I question is, do they have to play musical creative teams every 2 to 3 issues?
DC is bad for that right now.
Yeah, it's crazy the fact that they just hand off. This is like, oh, we're going to try this guy for an issue. Oh, sorry, you know, we need to bring this person back.
I think using the TV analogy, it is retooling. They're not given a huge length of time for a book to either work or not work. Look at a couple of these books. Firestorm had 5 writers. Green Arrow is on its 4th or 5th. Hawkman, I think, had 4 or 5. That's a lot of people rolling through a couple of these books in the space of less than a year and a half.
Yeah, and then there's some people that are on books or on a couple of books, and I'm like, why are you even writing a book right now? Because you're not doing
Hawkman had Liefeld writing it. That's like having 4 bad writers right there.
And the funny thing is that he might not have been he might have been not the worst writer that was on the book. So
we do have 2 new books announced out of this. This is 6 spaces and 2 books announced. We've got Art and Franco doing a book called The Green Team. And we've got Gail Simone and Freddie Williams III doing a book called The Movement. And these books are exactly what we were talking about in the last episode of the show. This is being marketed as the 1% versus the 99%.
That's crazy. What are we, Kreskin? We're talking about more political issues and that type of thing being covered in comics. I think it's interesting. Simone working for DC, huh?
She's back on Batgirl in 2 issues.
Really? That's fascinating, actually. Thoughts?
Let's talk about that. News too.
What's that?
I thought we talked about that already.
We talked about it quite excessively, actually.
Did we?
What kind of medication are you on right now, Mo?
Not enough.
All right.
But a lot of it, but not enough.
I'm curious about Art and Franco. I mean, the Tiny Titans, Superman family folk, and doing it a DC book about rich characters. There are characters that, what's the tagline? Money can buy happiness, and they'll buy it for you. I think it's something along that line is the tag of it.
Now, they have no recognizable characters in this Green Team?
No announced characters at all, actually. We haven't heard any casts. I'm assuming there will be recognizable characters, but I don't think we've heard a word about what characters will be appearing in these books. In either
I book. Just know it'll look good, and it'll be funny. And that's really, those 2 things, that's a good thing.
Fingers crossed for Green Man of the...
It'll be funny. Let's talk about our funniest ever moments that happen in books. Characters? Yep. And what? What's the matter?
Yeah, just drink on your Benadryl there, man.
Oh, it's good shit.
I have my fingers crossed for Green Man from the Mega Men and Ambush Bug as a buddy team.
Going quite but literal with the Green Team.
Thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're not rich, but they're green.
They are indeed green.
Maybe we could, revamp a turtle into a sidekick character. But that's just me.
So those taglines, Green Team, money can buy them happiness, and they want to share it with you. And the Movement, they were the super-powered disenfranchised. Now they are the voice of the people. So that's 2 of the 6 books that will be filling out the 52 again as we come into May. Predictions on what else we'll see?
A Robin title.
I've been thinking Robin or Robins for a while, yeah.
I know that'll excite Chris to no end.
Yep. Team Robins? Yep. You know
Team
what?
Hawkman, I'm sure.
Successful, that could lead to Team Hawkman.
That's right. the dream at last.
How about something like, you know what I wouldn't be surprised to see? Is something like a team-up book. You know, Superman team-up book like we've seen in the past, Batman team-up books, we've seen those regularly. Of course, Marvel's always had Marvel team-up as Superman's had. And for the life of me, all of a sudden, I can't. DC Comics Presents, was that? No, what was it called?
Yeah, that was the Superman one.
That was the one with Superman. What was the one with Batman?
Brave and Bold.
Brave and Bold. So I would not be surprised to see something like that.
I've always loved those. I would be on board with one of those. I would like to see a main character, though, like Marvel did with Marvel Team-Up or Marvel 2-in-1, where you have
you take one main character, a popular character, like a Batman or Superman. I mean, that's where I got introduced to a lot of the smaller characters that I grew to love, I would read, that's where I first read my very first ever Metamorpho. That's where I first read Starman. I was introduced to him because he was teaming up with Superman. Hawkman, that's where first time I ever saw Hawkman, because he's teaming up with Superman.
Apache Chief?
But the thing is, it is a good way to introduce these smaller characters and keep them rotating and let them get a fan base. So, I mean, and then occasionally you have bigger characters.
Do you think they'll introduce another Vertigo character to try to bring it up in that regard?
Do we have any left?
Well, I would assume that there has to be somebody, but perhaps not.
Well, or if they're going to do anything with these National Comics introductions that they've done, like Kid Eternity.
True.
I mean, Kid Eternity's probably been the top, or probably the most known Vertigo character that hasn't been reincorporated yet. Most of the Vertigo, aside from Doom Patrol, I guess. Doom Patrol we don't have.
Tim Hunter? Could they bring him?
Tim Hunter's in Justice League Dark right now.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they've reintroduced him. Lemire got permission to use him because Hunter. It's similar to the Sandman deal that Gaiman signs off on when you use the character.
Is it time for Shazam to finally get his own monthly?
Could be. I'm trying to think of those. I'm actually wondering about Harley Quinn. They've raised her profile. She's well known from the video games. It looks like something's coming in Suicide Squad.
Hey, and a porn star just took the name Harley Quinn. So I mean, it's really taken off.
Oh,
me too. See,
thank you for bringing extra news to the news.
We don't talk comics.
We talk porn stars who use comic character names. So now we're up to two.
Oh, there's another one? Who else is there?
April O'Neil.
Oh, really? Nice. Guess what I'll be searching for on PornTube later tonight.
And, of course, there'll be a Booster Gold title, right?
Who?
Where's those cricket sounds? Brett's got those cricket sounds on hand.
You know what? Actually, of our predictions, I believe that is the most likely to become true.
No!
No, I think a Shazam book is the most likely to become true.
We should start a pool.
We'll put it on the same pool as what it is that Keith is going to be eating right before the podcast.
Yeah.
the things our listeners don't know, I routinely, and without thinking about it, bring a crunchy food to the podcast recording every week. And every week I get hassled for it.
You would think that one would learn by this.
Hold on, you're saying that you're doing that by accident?
It is accident. It is possible that I just need a snack at this time of night, and I prefer food that is crunchy.
What else is yogurt?
To do it.
Pudding? What's wrong with pudding, Keith?
Sometimes I bring yogurt.
Now, let's be fair. He did bring blueberries one time.
Yeah, that's but they true. Were frozen blueberries. They were still
and
crunchy.
And a metal spoon against a glass bowl, but I'm trying to give Keith some credit. You weren't very on the news.
Very little.
Wow, that's first for everything in the news. All right, well, let's do some creator shuffles, because I know Brett has said how much he loves those. DC has also got some creative shuffles coming up. Palmiotti and Gray will be taking over Batwing, trying to resuscitate that book that is doomed to failure. And Justin Jordan, who had been writing Team 7 and Deathstroke, will be moving over to Superboy.
And Justin Jordan will also be writing the story that Riley Rossmo's drawing for Superman.
Oh, fantastic. Do you know if that is for the... Yes, Riley was doing a signing at...
Alpha Comics.
At Alpha Comics.
Friend of the show, Alpha.
Friend of the show, Alpha Comics. And Brett got some inside scoop. Fill everyone in on that.
Well, all I know at this point is that... is that Riley Rossmo is drawing a Justin Jordan Bizarro story. I'm pretty sure that's the... I know it's going to be Bizarro. I'm pretty sure it's Justin Jordan. And I guarantee it's Riley Rossmo. Don't know where it's going. But I was... And I know it's not ready yet, but I was trying to pitch him on putting in the Bizarro dog character. So if the Bizarro dog character gets in there, then... Oh yeah, totally all me.
Now, there's a title we should have, a regular Bizarro title. I'd collect that.
Well, that it sounds a lot to me like that is going to be the something that will appear in the digital first Superman book. And we're going to get to that book in just a second. But one last creator announcement. With Green Lantern number 20, Geoff Johns is ending his run on Green Lantern, his 9-year run that started with Rebirth all those years ago.
And I have read almost 6 issues of that run.
I think a little more than that, Brett.
Maybe 8.
Well, you've read Green Lantern lately.
Yeah, I've read about 3 issues.
Oh, but you said you liked them.
Oh, I did. I did like the new Green Lantern. It's not that I don't think I'd like it. It's just that it's so daunting because it's 9 freaking years of continuity.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's big news, though. That's big news, both for what happens with Johns next, but also, you know, what happens with the character. Though I'm sure, you know, I mean, let's face it, this 9 years, that's the seminal run. That, I mean, he's redefined the character for the modern age. That's burn Fantastic Four type level stuff we're talking here.
Oh, no, that's way bigger than Burn. Like, in fact, Burn isn't even, I think it was...
I'm not talking about the amount of years, Brett. I'm talking, though, just in the influence of the characters. Mm. Kind of, you know, for the modern audience. Or what Miller did. I mean, Miller wasn't around that long with Daredevil, but just the influence and what, you know, the modern take and the everything. I mean, he's definitely got that kind of, that level of success and that level of a run. Like Peter David had on the Hulk again, another example. He's got that going with Green Lantern, so it's very that's big news.
That's a lot for someone to pick up. And sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going. I hope that makes room for more John's Flash. I always like that. But
well, John's this busy guy. He is working on. He's got Justice League. He's got Justice League of America. Writing or co-writing Vibe. He's switching to co-writing a few books. And I'm assuming that, you know, he's doing the Booster Gold book.
Why would they put anybody on Vibe? Doesn't that book just write itself?
No one knows.
Just throw out blank pages and nobody notices? My God.
Yeah, I can already see top 150 book.
No, but here's the thing. You guys are, again, you're thinking of the Vibe from you know, Justice League Detroit. It won't be that character at all. It will bear very little resemblance to that. And it's another chance to introduce maybe another character with a little diversity, ethnic diversity into the universe that actually does take off.
Well, the picture certainly looks like almost exactly like the Justice League Detroit Vibe.
Yeah, it won't be. It'll be a modern take on it, though.
He's still named Vibe.
Dude, there's no way.
are they going to make it more formal and have him be the Vibrator?
There's a book I'd buy.
And his sidekick, Dildo.
Pocket Rocket. That's going to be his vehicle he gets around in.
Could we make the sidekick a wiener dog?
Awesome. See, now we this is a way better book than whatever they're going to produce, I tell you right now. All right, Keith, get that last little bit of news.
One last little bit. So the Adventures of Superman anthology, which will be a digital first similar to the same as the Legends of the Dark Knight, with the revolving creator teams. And, you know, DC's gotten a lot of hassle for not hiring enough women, not hiring enough varied backgrounds and types of creators, early career folk. And I really applaud them for expanding and hiring a complete asshole to launch the Adventures of Superman anthology.
Well, it's a safe bet move. They won't have any gay characters in that book.
Well, they actually Orson Scott Card will be writing the first two installments of the Adventures of Superman digital first, and he has written gay characters before in the most offensive ways you could think of.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's fair.
Yeah. Well, when you look at it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he an asshole, Keith, or is he just that he has different political points of view than you? He's a religious man.
He's an asshole about his points of view.
He's a board member of the National Organization of Marriage, which is founded in 2007 in response to the growing need for an organized opposition to same-sex marriage in state legislatures.
Okay, but you know what? I know somebody else. I have to say this. I mean, I'm for same-sex marriage myself personally. You know, that said, I also know somebody who is on a similar board and is also a Mormon and has those same points of view. He's one of the nicest, most honest, most caring human beings I've ever met in my entire life. And so, you know, I don't think it's fair to judge him as an asshole based on just that.
I think it is, but I like his writing, so I choose to remain quiet a lot of the time on him. Really love Ender's Game.
He's a good writer.
All right, so mixed reactions here, and mixed reactions in the Twitterverse for sure.
Are they? I didn't think they were mixed. I thought they were pretty much like 90% against.
It's Twitter's an echo chamber. Keep in mind, the folks that you hear don't necessarily represent the entirety.
That is true.
No, the folks that you represent are likely people with a similar point of view because that's who you would want to talk to, right? Or see or hear from.
Yeah, as an atheist, I follow very few religious nuts. So
it's just you and you just follow Brett Booth and that's it. Just you and Brett Booth.
That's right. We got an atheist over there. And Keith, you're a Buddhist.
I am. Atheistic Buddhist, yeah. I do
there
not.
There you go. That's the best kind of Buddhist there is.
All right. And that's the news.
Excellent.
All righty. Well, let's explain the topic this week.
Now that we're done talking comics on when we're not talking comics.
Yeah, basically, I'm just going to throw it out here. Chris, what it is give me if I'm wrong here, it's you want to talk about stuff that's geek-related, but not necessarily comic book-related, correct?
Exactly. There's this soup that sort of mills around the podcast, stuff that we never get to talk to, because, I mean, we geek out, but we never get together and geek out and just talk stuff, and I was wondering what would happen if we just took comic books out of the equation and just did the stuff that circles around the podcast. Let's get the broth, the geeky broth, rather than the hearty vegetables of geekdom going here. And I've got a couple topics that I wanted to hit, so let's start with the first one. Now, a couple years ago, we announced that Arrow was going to a series, television series, and we announced another comic book property at that time, Booster Gold. Now, I think this is the appropriate time to check in on Keith. How's that coming?
Nothing's happened.
Nothing?
They're waiting for the new book to get
launched.
They're
waiting patiently for the new book to be launched in June. all we know is that Sci-Fi is working on a pilot. Sci-Fi's got a different pace, different structure than everyone else. We're assuming it's now going in. I don't know if, I think it was a script order was what originally happened, what was originally announced. So it is still alive. Jeff Johns has been involved. I believe just as an advisor. I don't think he's writing the scripts, but he has been an advisor. He did write the Smallville episode that featured Booster Gold. Fingers crossed. It's still alive until it's not.
And I'm only asking because it was announced the other day Arrow's getting season 2, so I thought we should get some movement. Okay. First topic, I think there will be a lot of discussion here, Star Wars. They have announced both new Star Wars films, of course. We've mentioned that on the podcast. But we haven't mentioned the possibility of Star Wars standalone films, meaning focusing on characters within the Star Wars universe. They're getting their own movies. The first one's rumored to be Yoda, and there's also a rumor that they have Jabba in the wings. Any thoughts, guys? And who would you like to see in a movie? Personally, I'd like to see the Ewoks, but I'm a freak.
We've got two Ewok movies already. There's no Boba Fett movie, but there's two Ewok movies and a cartoon series.
Those are made for TV, though. Those are made for TV movies.
And that cartoon series is not very good.
We don't even have that for Boba Fett. We don't have a made for YouTube Boba Fett series, let alone a made for TV.
I'm going to say is this: I love the idea of featuring the characters and doing movies on them and storylines on them. If they're directed DVD cartoon movies, that type of thing, feature-length films, nah, I'm not into that.
Really? Because, you know, they make a $30 million, and I mean, that's a low-budget Star Wars film of Chewbacca. I'm going to theater for that, man.
Oh, absolutely. I think Kashyyyk would look awesome.
Kashyyyk does look awesome.
Yeah.
I think it would look awesome with a whole bunch of Wookiees for a whole story. I'm actually more excited about the standalone films than I am of adding to the original trilogy. Original trilogy. We've added to it before, but we can add it again.
To make a trilogy out of the trilogies is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm going to throw out a character, my character, my pick. I'm only going to pick one. I don't know if anyone else is going to pick one, or they're going to pick seven or zero. Wedge Antilles. I want to see a Wedge movie. That live-action Wedge movie, I'd go see.
A Rogue Squadron kind of thing?
That type of thing.
That would be pretty awesome.
That opening scene of the Rogue Squadron novels is one of my favorite of the Expanded Universe bits, where all the rookies see Wedge get out of a training simulator, and they see that he's got two Death Star badges on his arm. The only pilot that has two Death Star badges.
Porkins. A prequel Porkins movie. Maybe a whole movie on how they fit him in the ship.
I'd love to see I actually think that Count Dooku would be a great character to see more of.
Really? Clone Wars hasn't Count Dooku you up?
I like the Clone Wars, but I mean, really, he's in it so little that.
But he's mentioned every episode.
How
about Count Dooku when he was young?
Yeah, that's a little more like when he got into the Force. Like, I think that would be one of the neater things. But
that's the best phrase ever. When he got into the Force.
Yep.
Like it was grunge.
Yeah, exactly. Back in the day when like I was first music. hanging like with was, the Force.
When Dooku got into house music and the Force.
And he let house music go because the Force was his true passion.
Okay, and how about starting with Yoda? Do you think that's a weird choice? I do. I can easily see a lot of storylines that would be a Jabba-centric, but Yoda, haven't we been there and told most of those stories that
need to be told? The character was 900 years old, Chris.
Yeah, I know, but he was... He doesn't get any taller.
No, but he was 900 years old worth of stories to tell.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that we got at least 850 that we could go through.
I don't know. I think it's really weird to start with that character.
A long time ago and about 700 years earlier than that, Yoda. I actually am not interested in the Yoda movie at all. I have heard rumor that that Boba Fett or young Han Solo will be the first standalone, but we'll see. I think Boba Fett is the one.
Here's the thing, you know, you say young Han Solo. I got to say, it's, and I obviously had this fears of the Star Trek movie, and it didn't turn out bad at all. But the idea of recasting a young Han Solo, I just want to see one guy ever as Han Solo. Just like I only want to see one guy ever as Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, we could have said that about Obi-Wan Kenobi, though.
Nah, and I never said that about Obi-Wan.
Some may continue to say that, but...
some do. I don't think that was as indelibly marked as Harrison Ford as Han Solo.
Shia LaBeouf is looking for work.
Yeah. Yes.
He is? I just assumed he starred in everything that Spielberg was producing.
Oh, how about this? I got it. River Phoenix as, no?
Too soon?
Too soon.
Oh, there's always room for a blue ghost in these movies. Hey, that was like an extra level of joke there. I didn't even realize when I said it. Oh, I'm even funnier than that.
Awesome. Awesome.
Terrible.
All right.
I'm going to start the rumor right now. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is young Han Solo. Nice. I read it somewhere. Repeat it.
Hey, well, to go back, I think 3-4 months ago when we first announced these movies, I said, you know who will probably end up doing these movies, and it'll be the ultimate geek triumphant to have done Star Trek and Star Wars at the same time, and everybody said it was never going to happen. I called it. J.J. Abrams. Go back in the podcast.
Yep. No, you did call it. I remember that specifically, and that brings us to our next topic. With J.J. Abrams moving over... And personally, I think it's a little bit of a mistake. J.J. Abrams has a cleaner style. Star Wars is a little bit of a greener, grittier universe, but I'm hoping to be pleasantly surprised.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about with that greener, grittier style, cleaner universe thing. That I don't. What the hell are you talking about on that?
Well, Star Trek has rules. Star Wars doesn't. But I'm not getting into that. I just want to say, can the new Star Trek survive without Abrams at the helm? And do you think, is it a possibility that it'll be directing both series or producing both series or involved in both series? Do you think DC and Paramount would allow that?
Warner and Disney?
Didn't I say Warner and Paramount? I thought Star Trek was Paramount.
Then it's Paramount and Disney.
Yeah. Oh, did I say Warner? I'm sorry.
All right. You're just trying to talk comics, is what you're trying to do.
let's get Justin Jordan on that book too. Let's get him on Star Trek 3. I think Star Trek will be fine. Star Trek has always had a lot of the other movies. Is there two by the same director?
Yes, but they've always had Rick Bergman, I believe, at the helm producing. Which explains the survival of Star Trek after the motion picture.
Well, Bergman was really important to the whole movie universe, no question.
And yeah. And I don't see that person in the Star Trek universe right now.
But you still have the same screenwriters, and I think that frankly, maybe they're in as important an element. I mean, Orsi and his writing partner. I mean, they do a lot of producing.
Write the script?
No.
I mean, how much of the creative process did how much power did he wield beyond the directing of the film itself?
Well, in film today, that's seen as the big deal. Film of the past, our lifetime.
I mean, what?
I just know. I know that those characters have been around a long time. I know that there's a lot of people that have a handle on those characters. A lot of people that have a good handle on those characters.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the Star Trek franchise. I don't think it's going to die just because J.J. Abrams is working on Star Wars.
I was actually more concerned about change. I think without Abrams, there's going to be a different stamp on the Star Trek universe, and I'm not 100% sure that we can survive a change. Star Trek can survive a change this soon out.
Oh, I don't think that's
a direction change, because every time we've had a Star Trek universe, we've explored that universe or that series a long time before a change has been made. All right.
I think
it change anyways.
I think it opens up the most important thing in movie history: Star Wars, Star Trek, the crossover. That's it.
Oh God, well, I can't think of anything I want less.
Okay, you can't say think of anything you want less.
It is like it is like getting peanut butter in my recycling bin. It is like two things I like that should be nowhere near each other.
Okay, I know you're saying that. I know you're saying that, and you know what? I wouldn't mind a comic book. I'm not sure I want a movie. I wouldn't mind a comic book, though, which is a crossover, but let's just put it this way. None of us can deny that happens. It probably triples whatever the highest grossing movie of all time is, easily.
My eyes will bleed, but I'll go.
Yeah.
Opening day, I'm just going to be sitting there going, box office, this is going to suck.
It will do more than Avatar and all its sequels in just one film.
Alrighty, next topic. Now, last week we saw the announcement that Young Justice and the Green Lantern computer animated series have been canceled. Nobody seemed to care about the GL series, but Young Justice has a devoted fan following. In addition to that, they have announced a replacement in the DCU on Saturday morning for another Batman series called Beware the Bat, which is CG animated 3D style. And the series I'm excited about, Teen Titans Go.
Gnuff Nug! Yay, Teen Titans. I love that show.
I do too. Do you think a more comedic tone that they're taking with it is appropriate? I mean, I like the adventure aspect of the previous Teen Titans show.
Yeah, but you know, I think one of the things that worked really well about the previous Teen Titans show was actually the stuff that did take place in Titans headquarters, because there was some really, really funny stuff that happened in there. And so I think basically we're just looking at a show that's an extension of that. And they're bringing back all the original voices, so I mean, I think that this is going to be a winner.
Now, has anyone seen the trailer for Beware the Bat?
No.
Okay. Take it from me, it is, oh my god, awful. Same animation style as the Green Lantern series. Keith, I've never seen Green Lantern.
You say it's awful. You say it's awful just based on only the animation, or just the story and the writing and the voices and all that stuff like that?
We only have a 10-second promo to judge from. There's a lot of talent involved. I've only seen the animation. I just can't imagine the Batman done in that Green Lantern style.
10 seconds. 10 seconds.
I'm not giving a review. I'm just saying I'm not looking forward to it. I will watch it because it is the Batman. And I've been surprised before. I did not jump on Brave and the Bold immediately when it came out, but it turned out to be one of my favorite cartoon series of all time. I love that series.
Hey, every single thing with this dark cartoon stuff, and DC has the strongest track record possible. It all comes down to, at the end of the day, if the writing is good, the stories are fun, I will watch. I don't care about the animation. If the writing is good, the stories are fun, I will watch.
Now, Keith, I've actually heard you on Twitter talk about the Green Lantern series, stating the exact opposite, that you like the storylines and the talent, but couldn't get into the animation.
That does sound like me. You lost me there for a minute, because I don't know if I've made it through two entire episodes of the Green Lantern cartoon. I did like the style of storytelling, and I was interested in where they were going to go, because I know they were introducing. I know the Red Lanterns came in at one point, but I'm really put off that animation style. I don't watch the Clone Wars either. I don't care for that that CG style. I find it, I don't know, it reminds me of what it is too much. That it's constantly telling me that it's fake, and there's no distance from it like there is with comic art or traditional animation for me. It all looks like cutscenes from video games to me.
I have to agree with you. Any thoughts on Young Justice? I've heard the second season is really good. Young Justice Invasion. I didn't dig the first season, so I didn't continue with it.
Same for me.
I've heard good things about it, but I've never tried it.
All right.
And strangely canceled.
yeah, exactly.
this focus group doesn't show good good audience retention.
Never watched it. Yeah, okay, good. And I didn't like the Green Lantern animated series comic book.
Wow, why would you read that?
I read one for my Access All Ages column.
And, oh, right.
And it was terrible because it was one of those, by the way, we're going to put a moral into this story. It's almost like watching a G.I. Joe animated series episode, you know? It's just like, so, let's wrap up what we learned at the end of this issue. Yeah, I don't...
The more you know, Filmation...
exactly.
Knowing is half the battle, the other half is fancy colored rings.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Thank you. I gave Chris
Jim the Rockers the podcast.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on. Are you guys excited about any new TV series this season? We've already had the premiere of Mockingbird Lane and the cancellation of Mockingbird Lane. We've also had the premiere of Do No Harm, a medical drama involving Jekyll and Hyde, canceled during the first episode.
It was actually like the test pattern was watched by more people than Do No Harm was.
See, I think it's great. Like, this is the best thing about like social media and stuff like that now is that we don't have to sit through 8 or 10 episodes of something. It can be as immediate as less than 1 episode that we can just immediately assume, no, you're right, we screwed up on this. Okay, thanks.
They did the Munsters again with Jerry O'Connell.
And it was fantastic. It was hilarious. It was great. It was
funny, but I don't care. It's going to be Brad Garrett.
I loved it.
Yeah, I'm with Keith on that one. Any thoughts on a Hannibal television series? We've already seen the pseudo-clone come out the following, and I was excited about seeing that, and I have to say, after 2 episodes, I'm not going back.
I actually happened into the San Diego Comic-Con panel for those 2 shows, and his name escapes me, but it was the creator of Mockingbird Lane and Hannibal.
Brian Fuller.
Thank you. And it was Brian Fuller's panel. It was in the room. It was the event in the room where Joe Straczynski's panel was going to be. So I got there early and caught all of Brian Fuller's panel. And he had footage from Mockingbird Lane. And then he talked about Hannibal. And what he was talking about with Hannibal sounded really interesting to me. He said essentially that it is that there is there's a 7-season arc to the series, and season 4 is Red Dragon.
Oh, you know, 7-season arc, Brian Fuller, they had me right there. I was sort of buying in with just Brian Fuller. I followed him since Wonderland. To hear Straczynski-like plan for a series, that actually excites me. I'm glad the following isn't all that great now. I don't have to compete series.
For me, TV is on a real wait and see basis. Like I almost never watch a new show. I pretty much have to let it go through it has to complete a full season and get an order for a second one pretty much before I'll even consider starting it.
Yeah, it's TV. I'm sure I won't watch it.
No, I know you won't.
I waited till about halfway through the season to try Revolution. I watched the first episode and thought, I suspect this is stupid. So I went to Twitter and I said, hey, anyone still watching this? Is it stupid? Like, what? And then it was just a list of, dropped it at the second episode, third episode, second episode, third episode. Okay, I think I'm good.
Yeah, the consensus, yeah, survey says, stupid.
Yeah, I'm to the point where I need the renewal of the second season before I get into a show after getting burned on Flash Forward and so many others.
Oh, Flash Forward got so boring so fast. It was so bad.
I really liked Flash Forward actually, and it had ups and downs for sure, but they had ample opportunity to wrap up the series and then didn't.
Oh yeah, no. I enjoyed that one Christian Slater series that lasted like 11 or 12 episodes or whatever. But My Own Worst Enemy. But yeah, I mean, again, that was like no chance.
Oh, confused me there. He's had like two series since then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they all.
He actually had a series that got canceled. He did another one, and then Breaking In got renewed after he had done another show that they canceled.
I heard Christian Slater actually had a show that he filmed during this podcast recording that was canceled before it was over.
Canceled halfway through filming.
Yeah.
and meanwhile, Charlie Sheen has gotten renewed for four more seasons just while we were doing the podcast.
Yeah. Of the same character.
Oh, could you believe that Charlie Sheen deal? It was like 75 episodes for season 2.
Are you serious?
It's a bit insane.
Oh yeah, and he owns the stuff. I mean, if they renewed it for season 2, they wanted enough to go straight into syndication. So, boom.
Holy crap.
I mean, he made more money over. He made more money by sleeping with porn stars and doing drugs, and getting fired off his old show because they had to pay him out, and get a new show, then if he had been a good boy and done nothing, he could have gone to church and just showed up to work. The thing is, he never not showed up for work, so they had to pay him.
And hey, wait a second, didn't the kid on that show just go to church and show up for work and didn't turn out so good? Well, maybe he opened his big mouth.
Yeah, no, he opened his big mouth, which seems to be the problem with that show. But that show sucks to begin with, so who cares? Yeah,
very much so, very much so. Come
we
on,
don't
Chris.
Talk comics or anything remotely comic related.
Save us, Chris. Save us.
All right. We're throwing up the last topic for tonight: new movies. Anything you guys are excited about? Anything you guys things that make you want your head to explode before it happens? We got some weird stuff coming out in the next year. Anything. For me, it is the Superman movie. I wanted to see it go away, but it's filmed, so I don't think it's going to.
I am looking forward to the Star Trek, the next Star Trek Darkness, but I got to say, you know what, Chris, movies, I was watching some because I was sick. Oh, man. Now, I was catching up on the 1970s, mind you. But
it's good to keep moving, keep progressing.
I'm keep moving forward. Watched a lot of Charles Bronson, some Lee Marvin. Ah, good stuff.
Okay, now that we've heard from the old coot contingent, anything new you got?
I'm quite excited about Superman.
I'm interested.
Were you at all surprised when Warner Brothers came out this week and said, we're putting a halt to the Justice League movie until we see what the Superman movie does?
I think they don't have a plan. I think they're really making this they've got a finished film that they're hoping is the launch of a completely new franchise outside of just a sequel to that film. It sort of was the case with Iron Man, but it wasn't entirely the case with Iron Man. I think there was some concept that they were going to try something different with that they were going to do more with Iron Man than just Iron Man 2. I don't know, and I think it hurts them a lot that they can't really effectively tie it into the Batman series. if they would have made a plan to spin out of Dark Knight Rises and Man of Steel, they'd be in really good position, but that's not where they're at.
Yes, and let's be it known, we're talking a Dark Knight Rises before we saw Dark Knight, what Dark Knight Rises was.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no way you could spin out of Dark Knight Rises.
You could probably spin Superman. You could bring Superman into it, maybe. At the end, quickly. Maybe.
I think Nolan closed his trilogy really well. He closed the door. I don't think there was any
coming. What's wrong with the fresh start? What is wrong with the fresh start, though?
Well, we're talking about ways to relaunch. I'm in favor of a fresh start. I'm just saying.
There's no sense that it's getting anywhere. I mean, the whole idea of doing the Justice League movie is really they saw the success of Avengers and thought, hey, why aren't we doing that? Which, of course, you know, fans of DC and DC movies have been saying for like 8 years, why aren't you doing this?
Well, no kidding. Avengers, with this success, I would think that, I would think Justice League should be at least as successful. But that said, you know, just do World's Finest. Just start with that. Give us that.
Do something.
The reality is that you now have to introduce a brand new Batman. And you've got a Superman. And you've got a Superman.
Perfect time to do it. You know what? The last series has ended. You got a new Man of Steel. Perfect time to introduce a brand new Batman.
Yeah, no, we really need a ramp up period before you can get the GL movie. I think we need 3 or 4. And somebody at Warner's has
to. Bullshit. Why do you need time between that?
You need to develop these characters within a movie universe before. That was the beauty of the Avengers, is that you didn't have to be introduced to too many characters. You just they all had their moment.
You didn't have to tell 5 origin stories in a movie. It was really
exactly
the advantage. I mean, to do a Justice League movie, I mean, even just look at the, you know, even a Big 5. Superman, Batman, you're okay. Flash, you need to explain. Wonder Woman, you need to explain. Because I mean, I'm too young to have watched the Wonder Woman TV show. You're going to need to do some kind of origin story. And Aquaman, you're going to need to explain. So
is he the 5th?
Depends on how you count him. Depends on how you count them. Maybe Green Lantern, but they're not going to use Ryan Reynolds, so you've got to reintroduce it. So you've got to reintroduce Batman and Green Lantern with new actors.
Yeah,
Superman who may or may not fit. And you've got a Man of Steel movie that may or may not fit with other characters. We don't know what version of Superman we're getting right now. If we're getting the cold Kryptonian from Grant Morrison, which is kind of what we're expecting, he's not going to fit with the Justice League movie. Sorry, Brett.
We could get Jonathan Stewart as the Green Lantern.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And you tell a brand new origin story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. You totally have to. No, I mean, it doesn't.
That gets you to the same spot.
I think telling a brand new origin story, I think you can assume that the people are familiar with the powers and the overall concept of the character. I don't think you need to go into a full origin story. I think you could do those as prequels afterwards, in fact.
It's never going to happen.
You think that. It's not going
to
happen.
Never going to happen. They feel the need to tell Spider-Man's origin. They feel the need to tell Superman's origin, movie in and movie out.
Sony knows that there's more stories for Spider-Man than the origin.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Great.
Well, the character's what, like 10, 12 years old?
I can't believe that they... that Amazing Spider-Man movie was an ill concept, and they're making another one.
Hellishly bad. Hellishly bad.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's financially successful. That's what it's about, boys. Does it make money?
Yeah, but, I mean, you can slap the Amazing Spider-Man title on any movie, and it's going to make money.
Yeah, exactly. So you keep making them. I mean, there is a point in overtime.
Why can't we make good ones, though?
Sorry, I've lost track of what you're arguing here, Mo.
We
understand that the movie is successful, but the reality is that every time they do one of these characters, they have to tell the origin story. They feel it necessary.
I think we've moved past that. I'm just saying, there is a point in overturn, Chris, where Look at Batman and Robin. At that point, the movie's so bad and the box office is so little that you had to wait several years to redo it. The Spider-Man can get to that point, too. But they're obviously not at that point with this latest one because it's financially very successful, regardless of whether or not you liked it.
Nobody liked it. I live my little yarn. Of course, I'm excited about Machete Kills. And Machete Kills again, and I'm the only one. So,
no.
I don't think so. There's two. No, totally. Me too.
Oh. Okay, so. I skipped the second one to go to the third one. I want to see Machete in space.
I will say, I don't need a second origin of Machete.
No.
That's a good point.
Did we have one in the first one?
We saw him get the machete. What do you want?
Yeah, it was good enough for me. That was really all I needed for an origin. Don't need it rehashed.
Gordon Lewitt in Sin City. Any thoughts?
Awesome sauce.
Awesome. Okay.
Good stuff.
Any further thoughts on anything to do with Sin City? After this, I'm ending this, and we're going to Comic Book Attraction.
I'll believe it when I see it, is all I'll say.
Yes. I will happily watch it when it comes up. That's. I will not hold my breath until that point.
Well, I mean, he is filming. So, of course, he's filming about four movies. So.
Yes.
All right, let's go to Comic Book Attractions. This week, I decided to ignore Mo's suggestion of Dick Tracy because it's not a comic book. It's a comic book strip. I may come back and revise my rules, but I decided just to throw that out right now. Not doing comic strips. I am not watching Garfield, no matter what anybody says. So I watched Bulletproof Monk this week.
Welcome to Comic Book Attractions, the part of the show where I remind you of comic book films, both good and bad, that should be watched and enjoyed for what they are. Last week I talked to you about a film that I didn't think was based off a comic book, but rather a different movie based on a comic book, if that makes any sense whatsoever. This week is much the same case, although this movie isn't based on a sequel, but rather a group of other movies that a particular actor has appeared in. Of course, I'm referring to 2003's Bulletproof Monk. I have to say, when this began filming around 2001 in Canada, I was quite excited about it. I mean, one of my favorite actors, Chow Yun-fat, was coming to Canada to film a movie based on a comic book. Although at that time, I hadn't actually read that comic book. But it was exciting nonetheless. I mean, this kind of thing just didn't happen. And those of you that listen to the podcast regularly know I'm a little bit of a fan of the WTF. And this book had that going for it. In that, at that time, I had heard that Gautam Chopra, Deepak Chopra's son, was writing it. Now, once I actually was able to track down the book, this turned out not to be the case. He was simply acting as story editor. But still, I was definitely interested because several members of my family and friends were very interested at that time in Deepak Chopra. Not to mention, the son had changed his name to Gautam. Gautam Chopra. How freaking cool is that? He is down in the Batman annuals. I mean, that's just cool. So, as soon as they started filming, I got excited. I did my research. I did a special order on this book. It arrived. I read it. It was great. Although, there was no role I could see in this film for Chow Yun-fat. It starred a teenager. And, I mean, sure, there was a bulletproof monk in the book, but he only appears in silhouette and in legend. There was no meat for a leading actor. I was a little bit confused, but still, I mean, this movie looked spectacular before it came out. And then it came out and we got this.
He has no name. And he protects an ancient secret.
The scroll must never fall into the wrong hands.
Now he has come to the strangest place on Earth.
This is America. We don't have enlightenment here. We have strip clubs, Las Vegas, and HBO. Got it?
What the hell? I don't remember any semi-offensive pseudo-intellectual Chinese mysticism in the book. No. This didn't make any sense. I have to say, the movie is enjoyable on a level that all the prerequisite things in a Chow Yun-fat movie. I mean, he holds two guns. He doesn't fire them. What kind of BS is that? But he holds two guns, slow motion, Matrix effect, coat flapping in the wind stuff. And I mean, I like that kind of thing. But really, it has no comic book goodness in it whatsoever. I was truly disappointed with this film. I should say the original comic book was written by Brett Lewis and illustrated by Mike Avon Oeming, who has gone on to quite a career. If you can find this book, I would highly recommend it. All right, just to end this off, I haven't really talked about anybody behind this film other than Chow Yun-fat. I will say that it does star Sean William Scott and is directed by Paul Hunter, a director that has not gone on, thankfully, to make any other films, although he has a list of Rock Video credits as long as my arm. Let's hope we don't return to this cesspool, but I would truly be interested to revisit the source material in a film. But that's it for me. Chris, O-U-T.
All right, Chris, brave man, bulletproof monk.
God, I have to watch a good movie someday.
Yeah, really? Why the hell are you doing this?
I've had a series of duds. I don't know why I keep doing it.
Man, I remember being one of the seven people who ordered Bulletproof Monk when it first came out all those years ago. The series, reading like the first two issues, not being able to complete the miniseries, it sucked so much, and then hearing they're doing a movie, going, why? This is awful.
The
movie, from what I saw, had nothing to do with the series anyways.
I really liked the actual comic book, actually. I liked the graphic novel.
I didn't like it. But
the movie has nothing to do with the graphic novel, which is the problem I just explained. So, yeah.
All right, well, let's move on here. It's time to do some reviews because, Keith, we have a responsibility, a social responsibility here. When we're reviewing comic books, our review section is to do what?
Here I come to save the day.
We are saving you from bad comics.
Damn right. Even though this week, honestly, I myself thinking not really that bad comics. Let's open up with Uncanny X-Men, number one by Brian Michael Bendis and Chris Bachalo. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. Brad, what do you think?
I really like the book. Again, it's a nice tie-in with All New X-Men. I'm a little behind on All New X-Men, so I was a little worried that I was going to be, you know, behind the times a bit, but I wasn't. I really like what Bendis is doing with Cyclops. And, you know, Bachalo's a great artist. So, this one, thumbs up from me.
Yeah, you know what, Brett? I'm gonna agree with you on this. I don't think this is Bachalo's best work, but even, average Bachalo work is still tremendous. And for me, I mean, I went into this, I'm reading this, and I'm going, I don't know what's going on. But unlike most of the Marvel Now number ones where I didn't know what was going on, this time it didn't confuse me or piss me off. It just made me want to go back and read to find out what created this situation where I don't know what's going on. And that's a success. I think this is a pretty good book. I'm not invested in the X-Men, so I won't carry on with it. But I think if you do like the investment X-Men and you're a fan of them, you're definitely going to enjoy this. Chris, what do you think?
I actually found this book very distracting because I couldn't get over the fact that the White Queen has seemed to be hit by some sort of de-aging / shrink ray. She is very small in this book. they've changed your look here. I have to say, I read it. It was all right, but it's X-Men, and I have no emotional attachment to the X-Men. And the non-linear storytelling in the first issue I found a little confusing, being as they don't tell you who is talking on the first couple pages, and then you find out the last couple, and he's in the middle of the book, and yeah, I sort of got a little bit lost, but
well, Chris, I always get lost. It is supposed to be X-Men. The thing is what they were doing. I don't know if it was 100% successful. You might be right on that. I'm not going to disagree with that, but they were leading you to think it was a certain person, and then there was a swerve. It was somebody else.
Yeah. No. Exactly. I don't think it was terribly successful. But I'm always lost on the X-Men, so it's probably all right. But it's the X-Men, so I don't care. I wish I could give more of a objective review, but I mean, with the X-Men, it's hard. There's a lot of continuity there, and it wouldn't be comic books without continuity. But it's not a continuity I'm invested in. So,
Tom Reporter K.
This was an unusual read. With Uncanny X-Men, or All New X-Men last week, number 7 of All New X-Men. All New X-Men number 7 has nothing but talking in it. And this is a fighty book. I kept kind of waiting for more character to happen, but they just had another 2-page splash of fighty. Overall, I enjoyed the book. I did enjoy the B plot. Well, one's an A. I guess the B plot is probably the fight. So the A plot of I am starting to feel like the branding of this should be changed to Maria Hill now, though, because this is the third book she's turned up in. Never written the same way. I'm a bit curious why I'm seeing her as often as I am. I guess she's going to be in a movie coming up. I do now hear Colby Smulders' voice in my head when I see Maria Hill in the comics, though. I liked it. I'll keep going with it. I am really enjoying All New X-Men, and I'm hoping that they start splitting off the storylines a bit into to have Cyclops really the focus of this book and less in All New X-Men, and really really play with what they've done with this character. I really like what they've done with this character in the past 2 years.
All right, Keith, nice job on that one, and let's move on. Let's talk about Anne Nocenti and Alex Sanchez over at DC working on Katana number 1. Go ahead, Keith.
And it's snake format, isn't it? Okay. So
it is.
It is. And I ended. That means I have to go now. I will give high praise to the art and pretty much no praise to the writing. Really didn't dig the writing style. As we talk about, should artists have the following or writers have the following? I think this is the kind of book that makes me realize that I'm at least 60-40 for writers. I can continue with a book that's got so-so art if the writing's really strong, but I can't keep going with a book if it's got great art and lousy writing, and this is pretty lousy writing. Didn't care for it. It's really pretty. I'll watch for the artist on a different book. Christopher.
All right. Yeah, actually, I didn't think the writing was as bad as you did, but I was judging Anne Nocenti from her last DC work that I've read. That was her run on Green Arrow. So I was expecting nothing, and I was pleasantly surprised. I actually didn't hate it. There's nothing new here, and the art's gorgeous. I am putting this down as a book to pick up next issue, but you know what? If I miss an issue, I'm not going back and tracking it down. So mediocre at best, I guess. Rep?
Isn't it Mo?
I thought you were supposed to go before me, so.
No, it was you, Chris. Okay. Keith has now figured out what snake format is.
Yeah.
Chris is still working on it. It is me on this. I like this book quite a bit. I actually like the writing. I think that this was... I have no emotional investment again in Katana. It's kind of a fresh start for me. It's not a character. It's not a character who's around a lot. I've been reading the new Justice League, so I haven't been following her there. Historically, she's just kind of a character who's around and you see a little bit, but you don't really know too much. So this, to me, in a lot of ways, is where I saw a lot of characterization for the character that was exploring to me who what she is and her background. I thought this was well written. Art's very nice. I don't think it is nothing new, but I get the feeling it's the type of story that if I follow it and continue to read it, I'll enjoy more and more each issue. And by issue 10, 12, I'll be just loving it if it lasts that long. Let's say that. I mean, you know, it's pushing it. But I liked it quite a bit. To me, when I'm reading this, I'm going, this is the end of Senti to me that was writing Daredevil. This is reminiscent of the type of writing style she was showing on Daredevil to me. So that's what it harkened back to me. It's not quite at the level of her Daredevil, but style-wise, I felt that this was very similar. Keith, what were you... had something you wanted to add there?
I just wanted to make a note. The Justice League book, it's one of the oddest cover tags I've seen, because it says, from the pages of Justice League of America. Justice League of America hasn't debuted, so... They're from the pages of Katana, I suppose, is where this should be tagged. But
that is odd.
So you haven't missed anything there. She's been appearing in Birds of Prey.
Okay. Brett?
Well, Katana is one of those characters that, quite honestly, if we weren't doing this podcast, I would never have picked the book up in the first place. Katana has zero interest for me in any format whatsoever. So... And then the thing is that I had seen on Twitter before, there was a lot of people that were going on about the art. Some people liked the writing, some people didn't like the writing. I hate this book. I think the writing is crap. I think the art is enormously overrated. And there's nothing good about this book at all. Anna Senti has jumped 16 sharks in her writing. She is so awful now. Like, her Catwoman is trash. This is trash. I mean, I can't read her stuff anymore. I see her name, and I'm running screaming from it. So, and Katana, who cares? Dumb character. Blow it away.
Awesome, Brett. Brett, let's talk about one that maybe you enjoyed a little more. We'll find out, I suppose. Marvel Now is another relaunch. We got Secret Avengers number 1. Who are the gentlemen that did this? I guess it's Nick Spencer, Luke Ross, Matthew Wilson. Please, your thoughts.
I hated this book up until the last page. The last page earned this book enough of a reprieve that I would read a second issue. But up to that point, I didn't connect with anything that was going on, and I just really didn't. I didn't care for the characters. I mean, you know, they're a struggle to jam in a book together, I think, and I don't see this one lasting a long time.
Well, Brett, you know what? I gotta say it's. I do have a question for everybody on this book coming out of this. We'll wait till everybody goes through the reviews, but I think the characterizations on this are awfully inconsistent, and certainly. Not necessarily very likable all the time. That said, the book to me, just the pace was awesome. I think as an action book, a kind of a spy thriller, it works really, really well, and it just moved really well, and I found it exciting. So not a spectacular book, but one I liked, and I may pick up number 2. I'm not quite sure.
It'll be you now, Chris.
Ah, yes. Once again, Snake Fournette eludes me. I hated this book. The thing about me with the Avengers is the Avengers is a team book, and anytime you introduce a non-team, you already got me on the wrong side. Add to the fact that we got the new Nick Cage or Nick Fury Jr. in there. Strike 2. Then you don't have any real superhero action. You have terrorists and SHIELD stuff that I wasn't interested in beginning. I'm out. I like the art, but I'd be hard. I don't think this will last six issues. This is battle scars all over again for me. Keith?
I didn't like this thing. I wanted to. I like Nick Spencer. But again, it's a group of characters that I don't think make logical sense to be together. There's some clunky stuff in it where you're sort of seeing it from a specific character's point of view, and then other times you're not. It's got Maria Hill again behaving in ways that are inconsistent. I was talking to someone who thought the characterization of Maria Hill in the Avengers movie was off. I've yet to see her written the same way twice, so I have no idea who she's supposed to be. I had really liked the old version of Secret Avengers. I won't be following this one.
All right, well, based on all this, I do have one question for you guys, one that I want to just bring up. And I think this applies to all these books, but it really hit home for me when reading Secret Avengers. We have all these books. They're set in the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe, the superhero books. Is it just me, or do we not see any heroic behavior anymore? It seems like there's such a grounded level of realism to every single character that I feel like the real heroic, really admirable characters have been kind of gone. And I don't know if it's passé. I don't know if it's just something that was representative of a different age, but I feel like they just don't exist anymore.
I think that, like, I was thinking about this actually as I was reading something similar as I was reading Uncanny X-Men, and I think certainly in the case of Marvel, Brian Michael Bendis is a destroyer. He is the guy who he strips down every single character. Like, you look at his run on Daredevil, stripped him apart. You look at his run on Avengers, stripped them apart. Yet now you look and he's taking on Cyclops and the X-Men, and he's stripping Cyclops and the X-Men down. And I think that one of the things though that I'll mention is that on the opposite side of that, and I know you don't read him, I think Jonathan Hickman is a builder. He's a guy who takes characters and he builds them up. Mr. Fantastic is a builder. He's a more likable character, like under Hickman. Like, he is a different style of writer, and so I think that he harkens back to the kind of thing you talk about, but I think right now it is kind of in vogue to destroy.
Tough question. I think that Batman is a better character right now than he was before the relaunch. I think that particularly Snyder, but what Tomasi's been doing as well, it's a more heroic character than we've seen Batman be in a while. I wouldn't say that about Superman, and Superman to me should be the most heroic character. It's been my problem with Superman. It
seems to me like Captain America to me as a character is a lot less heroic than he was 20 years ago. You know, and he's another character. To me, the two most heroic guys, Superman, Captain America, historically.
I think it's just with comics, there's always been a state of flux. We're definitely in a low point right now, but more hero characters will come back, and I mean, with Daredevil, I mean, we did see Mark Waid's lighter version of Daredevil, a more heroic version of Daredevil.
And as the series moved on, he moves away from that.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm just saying, it's ebbs and flows. We're at low tide right now. High tide
Spider-Man,
will come back.
Spider-Man was once far more heroic than he's been presented for the last 15 years.
Yes, once again, low tide. I can't come up with any examples of good heroic characters in the Marvel Universe right now, because I don't think there are any, but I do think they will return. I'm not terribly concerned about it. Just like I don't really care right now that Hawkeye doesn't have his mask. It's coming back. He's going to get the cowl back.
No, he isn't.
He is. No, we just have to wait for this movie thing to die out a little bit.
But yeah, I mean, you look at it, and I mean, there was the Captain America period where Steve Rogers wasn't Captain America. You had John Walker, U.S. agent, and stuff like that, and the different Captain Americas that they went through, and it was a pretty dark period. You know, so I definitely think that that that's the kind of thing where it does happen, and it will, come back.
That but, wasn't really Captain America.
No,
Captain America was always heroic. That was just somebody else in the.
One of the things, though, it is true. But one of the things is that we're seeing now more so, I think, than for a long time, specific people having control over the entire universe. Brian Michael Bendis, Geoff Johns, you know, to a certain amount, Jim Lee, you know, and stuff like that. These guys are really in charge of the specific universes. And so I think that until those guys change out, then we're probably going to maintain this.
Okay. Well, let's kind of stop this here, because I think this is actually a bigger conversation. You guys feel like picking this up as a further show conversation at another point when we have more time to give to it, just the idea of characters who are more grounded in reality perhaps being less admirable, and picking that up as a further conversation at another point?
Absolutely. Let's hear some stuff on Twitter and email.
Let's hear some stuff on Twitter and email. You can reach us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. Couldn't be any simpler. If you have an opinion on this, or of course you can catch us on Twitter personally, Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. And I'm going to say OUT because I can't hardly speak anymore, but also check out the Comics Podcast Network. Brett will be the last guy to go out, so he has a great story for us. But Keith, why don't you go ahead?
All right, follow me on Twitter, CubReporterK. And I have switched my 900 Things blog to being bi-weekly because I'm finding it just way too hard to maintain weekly. But I am very, very close to hitting 450 of those 900 things out the door. I'm pretty impressed with myself. Christopher.
All right. I have proven this week and the previous weeks, I will watch any movie. If you have a comic book related movie, no matter how good or bad, that you would like to inflict upon me.
How about
or
you, Tracy?
Maybe you're, once again, not a comic book, comic strip. Huge difference. I may expand my base because I do want to rewatch Dick Tracy. I just didn't want to make any rule decisions quite yet. But that was my stance this week. Hit me up on Twitter, Chris_WeTalk. If you got a suggestion, I will watch it. I will take you more seriously than Mel.
I have a suggestion for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Superman the Musical. Oh, yeah.
I hate you guys.
Yeah, if you can watch that, I've watched it. So, hey, suffer. Join me in my suffering. Hey,
it has to be based off a comic book and a movie.
TV doesn't count then? Yeah.
I'll think about it.
All right. Well, I am Brett_WeTalk. That's Brett with two T's. And so anyways, I was in there at Alpha Comics, and I was in line. It was quite busy in there for Riley, which is great to see. And I had my copy of Dia de los Muertos and some Bedlam to get signed. And so I noticed that he was doing free sketches for people, which I thought was fantastic. And so there was some guys, they were chatting him up, and he did a really nice ink job on their sketch. So it was a beautiful sketch. They go out the door. The next guy comes up, and he's kind of, you know, shortish, dorky looking guy, you know, comic book store guy. But anyways, Riley, you know, kind of tries to engage him. They talk a little bit about Rot World and how they didn't enjoy it. And the guy's kind of leaning, you know, in an open position. So I thought, oh, well, they're talking comics, so I'm right behind him. I'm going to talk comics, too. So I open my mouth and start talking about the Alan Moore Swamp thing and how much that still gets referenced today. And the guy looked at me with a combination of, like, both that he wanted to, like, not hear from me ever again, and also just like, pure shock that I had actually, like, taken his talk time. And I was just wondering, like, really? I thought we were just talking comics here. I mean, you know, and there's Riley doing a sketch of Thor. And so Riley goes through and he's doing Thor, and like, there's these huge lulls in the conversation. And he's doing Thor, and he just kind of puts pencils over top, and then gives it to him, and the guy leaves. And then I stand there, Riley does my Golden Age Sandman for me. He gives it all sorts of inks, and we're chatting for 15 minutes. But I was just very surprised at the reaction to me attempting to join the conversation and talk comics in a comic book store. Little strange. Otherwise, check out on Comicosity my Access All Ages column. That's a monthly column. That's about it. So I think now we are truly OUT.